from KCPW in Salt Lake City, I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce, and this is City Views. For thousands of years, poets have chronicled history, explored love, and explained nature. They have critiqued politics and examined the meaning of life. So, what is the poet's role today? Is there still a need for lyrical language, verses filled with multiple meanings, mysterious allusions, and metaphor? The editors of a local independent poetry magazine answer a resounding yes and declare that in the 21st century, poetry is alive and well. Today on the program, we're celebrating the second anniversary of the Sugar House Review with one of the magazine's editors, as well as with celebrated poets Catherine Coles and Rob Carney. Plus, the history of the former Hotel Utah. A new documentary reveals details of the grand building on the corner of South Temple and Main. All that and your call after the news. Good morning and welcome to City Views. I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce. Packed with metaphor, symbolism, and ambiguity, poetry requires time and patience from a reader, commodities often in short supply in today's fast-paced world. But a local magazine is proving there is still a need and a market for contemporary poetry. Today on the program, we're celebrating the second anniversary of the Sugar House Review and exploring why poetry still matters. Joining me this hour is John Kippen. He is an editor at Sugar House Review and a PhD student in the philosophy department at the University of Utah. And John Kippen, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Also, Rob Carney, he's a professor of English at Utah Valley University and author of the books Weather Report and Boast, Toast, and Ghost, both winners of the Utah Book Award for Poetry. And his latest book is titled Story Problems. His work has been published in dozens of journals, including Sugar House Review. And Rob Carney, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
Also with us, Catherine Coles. Her fifth collection of poems, Flight, is forthcoming from Red Hen Press, which also published her fourth collection, Fault, in 2008. She's a professor in the English department at the University of Utah, where she teaches creative writing and literature, and she also co-directs the Utah Symposium in Science and Literature. Her work is featured in this latest edition of Sugar House Review, and she is also, of course, currently the Poet Laureate of Utah. And Catherine Coles, welcome to you.
Thank you.
Later on in the program, a look back at the old Hotel Utah. But first, poetry. Do you take time to contemplate a poem's multi-layered approach or dabble in composing verse yourself? What is it about poetry that grabs you? 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255, or you can send email to cityviews@kcpw.org. And John Kippen, I want to start with you. You've been in publication for 2 years. You launched right smack in the middle of the Great Recession. Why would you start a poetry magazine in the midst of such a really rough economic period?
Well, I think we were starting the magazine before the recession hit, so we didn't really have that in mind.
Did you think a poetry magazine could survive in somewhat turbulent economic climate?
We weren't really sure. We were doing it for ourselves, doing it because we wanted to do it. And we didn't expect that the reception would be as warm as it was. Once we got it started, we had all sorts of people submitting poems to be in the magazine. And we had a pretty big turnout for a reading at City Art at the library. But we just didn't expect that kind of support when we started. We thought it might be kind of tepid.
So it was a very selfish endeavor in the very beginning. You just wanted to do it.
Just doing it because we wanted to.
Catherine Coles, you know, we live in this world where there's a 24-hour news cycle. You can find a video of just about anything in a split second. Twitter feed is going around the world in seconds. How does poetry fit into this world?
Well, I think a world like ours makes poetry even more essential than we might otherwise have thought it to be. I remember when after the September 11th, 2001 events, poetry had an enormous resurgence at that time, and I think the reason is that poetry really engages a complex of emotions and allows us, as Mark Strand says, to understand in a way exactly where we are, but in a very complicated way, not a simple way. So poetry resonates with us even more, I think, in hard times than in good times, though. I consider myself to be a poet, at least as much of joy and pleasure as of difficulty.
Rob Carney, why does poetry matter to people today, in your mind?
Well, I'm going to qualify that. I think that it doesn't matter to everybody, clearly, but that's true of all times. For the people that it does matter to, it probably matters at least as much now as it ever did, because, like you said, everything is busy, everything is compressed, everything is quick, and everything is somewhat empty or shallow. Poems are the opposite of that. Poems really want you to slow down. Poems want you not just to think, but to feel with your gut and your heart. And a lot of times, Twitter feeds don't do that. In fact, probably they never do. So I think a poem will cause people to... there's a guy named Tomas Tranströmer who died not very long ago, and he said, it's like when you're a kid and in the middle of class, you're bored, and somebody hands you a note. And he said poems are like that. They're like being tapped on the shoulder as a grown-up in the middle of your life and handed a note. And that might be the thing that you remember more than anything else, not just that day, but that week. And, you know, poems are short, but they stay with you.
When did you realize you were a poet, that you could make a living this, doing what you love to do?
Oh, I don't make a living as a poet. I'm a college professor, which means I get to talk about poetry. So indirectly, I suppose, yes, but it's not my only subject. Teaching is the way I make a living, and I think that teaching is a schedule that should afford you, I don't know, maybe more time to be a writer. I don't think that most people, since, oh, folks like Robert Service or Carl Sandburg, actually make a living just off writing. Fiction writers, maybe, or script writers, but I think poets do it because they can't help themselves.
Is that fair, Catherine Coles? That you have to have an academic position in order to live and breathe your passion?
I think mostly that's true. I would qualify what Rob said. I believe that Billy Collins actually is making a living from his poetry.
But so there's somebody out there.
There is somebody out there, but I think for most of us, it is true that we need to find a way to make an income. I know when I was 7, I announced to my parents that I was going to be a poet and a fireman. So somehow, even then, I think I must have understood that poetry was not a way that I was going to be able to make a living. I will say, by the way, that I think it kind of depends on how you live your academic life. I have certainly found that during the times when I had a 9-to-5 job, I've actually had more time for my poetry than I've had teaching at the university, because my students pretty much think that if they email me at 11 o'clock at night, I should be emailing them back at 11:05. And and most of the time I am, and if not, it will be 5 o'clock the next morning. So I think that the thing about teaching is that it will take up as much of you as you will give to it. But the positive side of that is that you're engaged in the literary life, and that part of your brain is ticking over all the time. And that can be very helpful, I think, for a poet.
Mm. Utah Poet Laureate Catherine Coles is with us. Also, Rob Carney, professor of English at Utah Valley University. And a prolific poet. John Kippen is editor at Sugar House Review, and we are taking the opportunity of the Sugar House Review's second anniversary to talk about poetry and its relevance in our society today and in our lives. 801-355-TALK if you have questions or comments. 801-355-8255. Well, can we go right into some poetry? I'd love to hear some. Catherine Coles, let's start with your poem in the current issue of the Sugar House Review, Camera Obscura. You begin and end your poem with the words, "Invention fills the gap." I'd like you to read the poem, if you could, and then maybe elaborate on what those words mean to you.
Sure. Camera Obscura. Invention fills the gap. The blacked out room, dear heart, recasts a radiant street. Buses flashing past. My heart's a room darkened beyond memory, your kisses flashing past, discreet packets of light. Beyond memory, even my words to you, discreet, pack up light to build a world from need. My words to you can even break the poem's heart. To build a world, you need to draw the curtains. The poem's dark heart breaks under light's prick. Draw the curtains. The dark's a mirror, amnesiac. Through a pinprick, light casts the world, radiant. When the mirror forgets, invention fills the gap.
Utah poet laureate Catherine Coles reading from Camera Obscura, a beautiful poem. I love the imagery in there, and invention fills the gap. What does that mean to you?
Well, what the poem does, I think, and I don't necessarily always think in a conscious way about what I'm doing in the poems, but in this one, I was consciously making a metaphor of the object, a camera obscura, for poetry, and thinking about how the two might be like each other. I had actually been in a room-sized camera obscura that was set up in Rome.
And can you explain what a camera obscura is, for those who don't know?
I wish I had brushed up on this a little bit, but it's basically a chamber, a blackened chamber, that light enters through a pinprick. And in doing so, the way that the chamber is set up with mirrors, it casts images from outside the chamber onto the walls of the chamber. And usually these are small objects. A lot of painters have used them in order to create a sort of precise, almost photographic image that they would use in creating their arts. But the one that I saw in Rome was actually room-sized, and so the observer was inside the camera, and it was a moving picture that was being cast from the street outside. So when I talk there about the buses flashing past, et cetera, that's exactly the image that's being cast through the pinprick and the mirrors onto the wall in front of you. So it's a kind of moving picture. And it just made me think about the way that poetry can work with the images coming just like that so quickly and then passing on, but creating a kind of indelible impression on the mind.
And this phrase, to build a world, you need to draw the curtains. That's great. I mean, to me, it just conjures up this image of focus, mm-hmm. of isolation that can open up new worlds.
Right.
I think it's great. Catherine Coles reading from Camera Obscura, published in the current issue of Sugar House Review. Let's hear another poem from you, Rob Carney. This was published in the very first edition of Sugar House Review a couple of years ago. It's called What Any Stone Can Tell You. Why don't you read it, and then we'll talk about it.
What Any Stone Can Tell You. When the earth discovered it was earth, its astonishment became canyons, and its million years of laughter made them deep. There in those darker beds, it could lie down still and dream. Dream waterfalls over granite, dream moss as soft as love, dream pines at impossible angles, strong as love. It dreamt animals across grasslands, animals into forests, dreamt mountains to measure its distances, and birds to make sense of the sky. But this wasn't enough. All things need another, even Earth, and so do we. Not to own as if it were our echo, not to give back less than we take. We are born the Earth's other, to our own astonishment. Be grateful. Be grateful in Earth's arms when your bones lie down at last to sleep.
What Any Stone Can Tell You by the poet Rob Carney, a beautiful, beautiful, optimistic, and, you know, full of wonder. And I noticed as you were reciting this, you weren't reading it.
No, I don't want to make a mistake. If I'm looking at the page or back and forth, I might mess up. No, I do everything from memory if I'm going to do, well, reciting, I guess, is the way to say it, as opposed to reading.
Where did you get the inspiration for this particular piece?
Well, it's from a set of seven poems called From the Book of the Elements. And what I like working in numbers, units of seven. What I liked about it is there are only four elements. And if I want to do seven, I had to invent three. This is the earth element rather than one of the invented ones. The other three elements that I think exist are, well, I don't know what I can say on radio, death, emptiness, and, love in a more, I suppose, physical way.
Okay.
So the idea comes from, I like origin stories. I like myths. I like making them up, though, rather than just living with the ones that we receive. Not that there's anything wrong with them, but I enjoy the act of making these up, creating them as a way of understanding. And I think that everybody tends to ignore the myths that we've got until, oh, I don't know, a special moment or occasion jolts them into remembering. Whereas if you give them a new one, they're familiar with the form, and they're listening for the first time because it's an unfamiliar story within a familiar form. So that, and I like the oral tradition. And the two kind of go together, I think, myths and recitation.
And in this one, you really do breathe life into Earth. I love this image of Earth dreaming.
Yeah, well, isn't it? I mean, anybody who's been outside at night, you know, even in the city, especially maybe in the city because of the street lamps, when it starts to snow, doesn't it seem like the Earth is really there just dreaming? We're watching it dream. So how else do we explain these things? I mean, lots of ways, but sometimes those ways are, I don't know, maybe not as engaging. Intellectually, a scientist can explain the Earth, but I think that a lot of people feel dissatisfied with that story. So I'm not discrediting science. I'm just adding more to the discussion.
Rob Carney, he's a professor of English at Utah Valley University, also a poet. His work has been published in dozens of journals, including Sugar House Review, which is celebrating its second year in publication. Also with us, Utah Poet Laureate Catherine Coles and Sugar House Review editor John Kippen. If you'd like to join us, 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255, or you can send email to cityviews@kcpw.org. We're talking about poetry this morning on City Views. We need to take a break. We'll be right back. This is City Views on KCPW Salt Lake City. Welcome back. This is City Views. I'm Jennifer Napier Pierce. Today on the program, we're exploring why poetry still matters in today's technology-centric world. Do you take time to read verse? And what about poetry speaks to you? If you've got questions or comments about reading or writing poetry, give us a call. 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255, or you can send email to cityviews@kcpw.org. Joining us this hour, John Kippen, an editor at Sugar House Review. Also, Catherine Coles, Utah's poet laureate, and the poet and professor of English at Utah Valley University, Rob Carney. I want, before we get into a little bit more poetry, John Kippen, tell me why you think there is such an interest in having poems published today. And you said that you've been very warmly received from the poetic community. Is there something, is that such a thing? But who is submitting, and what kinds of poems are they submitting? What are the subject areas?
We're getting just tons of submissions. We actually closed submissions for now because we were receiving so many. A lot of people write things that are personal, and I think it's partially just that there aren't very many voices out there. There are only so many newspapers, and they don't tell all of the kind of stories that people want to tell. And so they're feeling like they need to tell the stories in another place.
So what makes a good poem? If you're going through these submissions, I mean, what are the ones that make the cut?
I think it's a mixture of the subject matter and then how it's told, like the sound of the lines, the meter of the lines. So there's a technical aspect too.
Catherine Coles, what makes a good poem to you? When do you know that you've finished a poem? Maybe just describe what that writing process is like a little bit.
Right. Well, at the beginning, and this may be the same for others, it may be different for others, but for me, at the beginning, what usually happens is that a piece of language, a fragment of language that has both a musicality, the way that John was talking about, and also probably an image attached to it comes into my mind. And then the job of writing the poem is about exploring or fleshing out or just following that piece of language wherever it's going to go. And oftentimes it will be more than one piece of language, and they won't necessarily have an obvious association at the beginning, so the job might be to figure out what that association is. I think the poem begins in that kind of exploration that's really inside of me. I know that it's finished when I've created, or I think I've created, an object that can live outside of me and invite someone else to come into it and just be present with it for a little while, whether I'm there or not. And so the process of writing the poem is really about the process of separating that first kind of self-expressive intuition out from the work of art that will eventually be created, that will be not about me, preferably, but actually about any reader that comes into it.
Is it different fundamentally in some way from writing prose? I mean, you've kept a blog, I've read it. I mean, is it different from writing a letter to a friend or composing some sort of academic article?
Yes, because poetry is inherently non-informational. So, for example, we were talking about the poem Camera Obscura. There's information behind that poem that it's useful to know. For example, what a camera obscura
sure.
might be, and also maybe a little bit about what a poem might be or how a poem might operate. But the poem isn't communicating that information. It starts with that information and then moves somewhere else with it.
Hmm. Utah poet laureate Catherine Coles is with us, also the poet Rob Carney and editor of Sugar House Review, John Kippen. We invite you to join us. We're talking about the local poetry scene and what poetry means to you. 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255. And we'll go to the phones, and Kathleen is joining us from Salt Lake City. Kathleen, hi.
Hi. What a great program. Thank you.
Sure. Go right ahead.
Okay, I just wanted to say that what poetry means to me, I should say us, we formed a group called the Wasatch Poetry Front, and we meet once a month, and we talk about one poem for about 2 hours, a group of us. And it's just been amazing what happens in those 2 hours and how the poem starts revealing itself in the course of our conversations. And it's just made poetry, it's brought poetry very close into our lives in a way that I think just reading it by yourself wouldn't do.
Kathleen, in your reading habits, clearly poetry speaks to you on a deep level. Did you read it out loud to yourself before you decided to get together with some friends and talk it over?
Yes. So every month, one person in the group picks a poem and sends it out in an email to everybody else in the group, so everybody gets a chance to read it. But it's, I mean, I have always read poetry to myself, and I have a million poetry books. But this way, it just hearing how other people respond to a poem or a line, it's like it reveals itself in a new way. It's a wonderful thing.
Kathleen, thanks very much for those thoughts. 801-355-TALK. Rob Carney, can you talk about the importance of vocalization of poetry and the recitation in conveying meaning? Or I don't know. I kind of like this the idea of a discussion group of poetry.
Oh, I do too. I think poems need to be heard out loud. And people are sometimes reluctant maybe to say them out loud to themselves, whereas if you are reading them together, you're much more likely to say them out loud. If you don't hear a poem out loud, you have to have an incredibly, I wouldn't say trained inner ear, but it's the difference between sight reading maybe and hearing a piece of music. If a poem is like a score, and I think that it is, then it needs to be played. People can appreciate, I suppose, sight reading music, but it helps to hear it out loud. And poems are built differently than prose in that musicality is a prose writer needs to get ahead, and sometimes there's an arc there, and there's an arc in a poem too. But I think a lot of times it's built on music rather than information. And if you don't hear the music out loud, then you're missing half of it, well, maybe more.
Do you read your poems out loud, the submissions, John Kippen, as part of the editorial process?
We
see how they sound.
Yeah, we generally don't read them aloud. We read them to ourselves. There are four of us who read them. And we all have different tastes in poetry, so something can grab one person's attention, and you know the rest of us have passed it by, and then they make us return to it and look at it again.
Group effort.
Yeah.
Thanks very much, Kathleen, for the call. 801-355-TALK is our number. 801-355-8255. Rob Carney, I'd like to put the question of process to you. We heard that Catherine Coles likes to take an image or a feeling and start writing. What's the writing process for you?
I suppose maybe less disciplined. maybe unfortunately more random. And a lot of times it's hard to even articulate this without it sounding crazy. You hear something. And I don't mean I heard an out loud thing that somebody said in passing and, oh, that sounded good. I can actually hear a kind of phrase. And it doesn't necessarily come from outside my head. It comes from inside my head. And if it's a good phrase, I'll recognize it. And then that's something that I want to play with. So the process is going to be different each time. A lot of times it's also a process dominated by kids in the house, or process dominated by school, or by emails, or by, Utah Utes football schedule. So it's not as disciplined as it should be, I suppose, if I wanted to really get things done. But it starts for me with a sound, it starts for me with a rhythm, but it also has to be more than just da-da-da-da. It has to actually be words. And if they're interesting and right, somehow I've done it long enough that I know that they are. And that's what I'll work from, that's what I'll work with, and I'll build from there.
And how long does it usually take, start to finish?
Oh, man, sometimes I can get it done very quickly, and other times it takes a long time. And, of course, then there's the crafting process, and that can go through many evolutions and drafts. And sometimes I'll be at the end of something or in the middle of something and not know what it is, and I'll just sort of have to feel my way around. I mean, the title poem, for instance, of my new book, Story Problems, I had that in mind, and probably subconsciously, because elementary school kids have to contend with, and parents have to help them with, puzzling out the logic of story problems, which are frequently illogical. And I have my own experience in the background with that, with like GRE analytical questions.
Sure.
And so I played with that as a form, but I don't think I started with line one and ended with line last. I think I moved around quite a bit. And if anybody were to look at my notebooks, they're not even notebooks. They're just whatever scraps of paper at a hand, scribbles here, crosses out, arrows pointing. It makes sense to me, but I think that if an outsider came in and tried to study it as a map, they would think they couldn't get any place with it. And so that's the nice thing. You show them only the arrival when you're done. Just like in a restaurant, nobody sits in the kitchen, you know? They don't want to watch the cook make it. They just want to sit nicely at the table and wait for the thing to arrive.
The poet Rob Carney is with us, also Utah Poet Laureate Catherine Coles and editor of Sugar House Review, John Kippen. 801-355-TALK if you'd like to talk poetry with us this morning. And we'll go back to the phones, and Nancy is joining us from West Jordan. Nancy, hi.
Good morning.
Good morning. Go right ahead.
My comment is that I have found poetry very useful in translating complex concepts from my brain to my heart.
Can you give us an example?
Well, almost anything that would be theological or emotional. I can understand text when it's written intellectually, but only with my brain. And it takes poetry to help me translate that into my heart so that I can feel what all of that means.
Hmm. That's nice. Thanks very much, Nancy. Rob Carney?
Go right ahead. I also wanted to ask, Rob, I was driving when I turned on your show, and I missed the title of Rob's poem that he was reciting about the earth dreaming.
What Any Stone Can Tell You.
And, you know, we'll have links to the poems that are on, that we talk about on the show on our website, kcpw.org. So if you want to take a look at that, we'll also have a link to Sugar House Review as well.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Nancy. Rob Carney?
I like what you said, because that is what poems are doing. You said, can you give me an example? And I think that's always what poems are doing. They're using imagery. Ezra Pound said, don't be viewy. Ezra Pound said, go in fear of abstraction. Marvin Bell, a more contemporary poet, says he likes ideas with their feet in the dirt. So always this idea of trying to make it concrete by way of example. And in poems, that's usually imagistic. And that's what people need. Maybe not narrative all the time, but imagery. And if it doesn't have a logic in your head, it does have a logic in your gut or your heart, so long as there's some sort of concrete thing, an example, to help render it into something that people can understand, I guess, sensually, physically.
Catherine Coles? Yeah, I think poetry is really about engaging the body, all of the senses, in order to engage both the mind and the heart. And the other thing that I would say, and that I think is always really important to say about poetry, because people think, oh, it's hard, and they're afraid that they're not going to measure up to the poem somehow, they're not going to be able to get it or get the right interpretation. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And one of the great things about poetry, any good poem is complex enough to lend itself to more than one interpretation, probably any number of interpretations. And every poem relies on the reader to bring his or her own life experience into the poem to animate it and to give it meaning. The thing that I always try to say, especially when I go into schools and where poems often go to die, unfortunately, is that poems are ultimately about pleasure. The main goal of every poem, even if there is some point that the poet means to bring across, the main goal of every poem is to engage pleasure in the reader and to make pleasure happen. And I think if you're sitting there worried that you're going to get the answer wrong on the quiz, those pleasure centers are likely to remain latent and not come alive during the engagement with the poem.
Well, I have an example. I think that other than all of Katie's poems in this issue, this is my favorite thing, and it's pleasurable. It's talking about snow. It says, "Beneath my boots, the snow squeaks as if it were crying. It will heal," he says, meaning spring. Meaning crocuses like debutantes with their fancy necklaces of rain. And I just love that knockout image. And that's where it's a poem called Knocking Down Icicles. And the poem's rather, I just think it's fantastic. I think I like BJ best in this issue quite a bit. And meaning spring, meaning crocuses like debutantes with their fancy necklaces of rain. I don't even like debutantes or know for sure which one of the flowers is a crocus. But I don't think I need to when he gives it to me this way. It's just, so there's an example, I guess, of the example of the example that we were talking about.
Now you're both professors. You spend a considerable amount of time in the classroom. Are there certain themes that you see students embracing more frequently these days? Or is it still, the standards of love and nature and relationships? I mean, we have such a rich tradition of those, but I'm wondering if, maybe technology is changing poetry in any way, or if there are different images that are being infused in today's poetry. Catherine Coles?
Well, poetry always has been and always will be primarily about love and death. Those are death is the mother of beauty. The fact that the poem comes to an end and comes to an end quickly is one of the things that enables it to engage pleasure in the way that it does. Young people are constantly falling in love. Sometimes I prohibit my students for an entire semester from writing love poems, which, as you can imagine, at 18 or 19 or 20 years old,
that's a tough call.
is extremely difficult. I also prohibit them arbitrarily sometimes from writing about kittens, skiing, and certain other kinds of things that lend themselves to cliché. And then the best students will find a way to break my prohibitions and to do it really brilliantly and well, and they get rewarded for that. I think that one of the difficulties of being a very young poet is that mostly very young poets don't have a lot of material to bring to the page yet, and so they're working on technique, in hopes that at some point, whatever you might want to think of as experience or wisdom or whatever comes to intersect with that technique and create something that's really spectacular.
Have your poems improved over time, Rob Kearney?
Mine? Oh, I hope so. I mean, yes, please. Somebody else call in and say so.
I'll say so.
Yeah. No, definitely. But anything you do for a long time, you should start to get better at. And, you know, as long as you're not repeating yourself or saying something you said better a different way before, or, yeah, I would hope that it'd get better. I like this book because it's new, but I like it better than Weather Report, I think, because I'm doing what I did before in terms of skills, but with new subjects, and maybe I'm reaching out in terms of different forms or broader subjects or new things. Yeah, Carl Sandburg said late in his 70s that he hoped he would live a long enough life that one day he could call himself a poet. So I think the idea is we always get better.
Hmm. John Kippen, again, we're taking this chance to talk about poetry because you're celebrating your second anniversary of publishing the Sugar House Review. In your introduction, you, the editors, write that you love poetry, period. So what is it about poetry that speaks to you and you feel like needs to be shared?
One of the things I like most about poetry is that you have these feelings about different things in the world, and sometimes you'll be reading a poem and you'll think, wow, that just described it perfectly. And like forever after that, when you have an experience or a feeling like that, you'll think back to that particular poem and it will be like they put it in words for you.
Do you write poetry yourself?
Uh-huh. Yeah, I'm still working on it. I see what other people are doing and I think I have a ways to go.
John Kippen is an editor at Sugar House Review, now celebrating its second anniversary issue. And John Kippen, thanks very much for your time.
Thanks.
Also, Rob Carney, professor of English at Utah Valley University. His work has been published in dozens of journals, including Sugar House Review, and the latest issue has a review of his latest book, which is titled Story Problems. Rob Carney, thanks to you.
Thank you.
And Catherine Coles, Utah's poet laureate. Her fifth collection of poems is coming hot off the press very shortly. Catherine, it's always a pleasure.
Thank you.
Up next, remembering the old Hotel Utah. But first, we need to take another break. This is City Views on KCPW, Salt Lake City.